Okay, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, well, hello. This is Jeff Gagliosi, and you're on MisplacedStraws.com, where music comes to life. And I am honored to welcome a really special guest for today's conversation. He is the man behind the iconic bass lines to such songs as Magic Man, Barracuda, Crazy on You, and countless others. Please welcome original heart bassist and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Steve Fawson.
Welcome, Steve.
Hello. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Well, before we get into your illustrious history, let's talk about your current project. With fellow Heart Rhythm Section alum Michael DeRozier, a band called Heart by Heart. Tell me a little bit about how that band came together.
Well, Summer and I and Mike met back in 2008 when Mike and Roger and I were playing a party, and we needed a singer to sing a couple Heart songs because we hadn't played Heart music for so long that it was kind of strange. But anyway, for this party, we were asked to do a couple Heart songs, so we got Summer to sing, and that's when I met Summer. And I thought she was a very nice person, a good singer, nice looking and intelligent and everything. And we left it at that. And then over the course of the fall and the summer, or the spring, the summer, and the fall of 2008, for some reason we kept running into each other at different functions and dinner parties and stuff like that. And so we set up a friendship, and that friendship turned into a romance. And then we started dating, and we actually got married in February of 2016.
Oh, congratulations.
So when after Summer and I had met, we had a duo for a while. It was a bass and vocal duo, and we would play bistros, and we'd sit in on jam nights with, different clubs around the Seattle area. And I would sing harmony, and Summer would sing lead, and I play bass, and we were having a good time, and people started noticing us. And then we got a phone call from a guy in Anchorage who needed a band to open up for Dwight Yoakam. And so we said, sure, we'll do it. But we thought, well, a vocal and bass duo would be a little light. So we asked Mike and another guitar player that we know, Randy Hansen, to
put together a set.
So we put together a 45-minute set to open up for Dwight. And then at the last minute, Dwight canceled the gig. So we were a little disappointed in that, but we had a band.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few months later, a person that we know is putting a benefit on for the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Awareness. And they asked us to play, and we played it. And a lot of people saw us at that. And we raised quite a bit of money for the benefit. But these people they got a hold of some booking agencies in the Seattle area. And the next thing you know, we started getting booked all around Seattle and Washington State. And then up through our website, we were contacted by some people on the East Coast. So then we started playing on the East Coast, and then one thing led to another, and now we're playing all over America.
So it really was an organic thing. It wasn't manufactured in any way. It just kind of fell into becoming what it is.
Yeah, exactly. It was very organic, and the way we met Lizzie was very organic, too. Lizzie is, of course, the acoustic and electric and keyboard player who sings background vocals for Summer. About 2 years ago, we heard of Chad Quist and Randy Hansen, our original guitar player. He's also a Hendrix artist. And he got so busy doing his Hendrix thing, and we were getting so busy doing the Heart by Heart thing that we couldn't coordinate gigs. So then we found Chad, and Chad agreed to join the band. And so now we have, the lineup Chad Quist, Lizzie Daymont, Summer Masick, Mike DeRozier, and me.
And now, as it was growing, did you and Mike have any talk of bringing in Roger Fisher or Howard Leese from the original band?
Well, you know, of course, we would love to play with Howard Leese. And when we first got the band together, we, you know, because Roger lives in this area, we invited Roger to join the band, and he declined because he's busy doing the Roger Fisher, whatever that is. So it would be nice, but and Howard is, of course, very busy doing. He plays in Raiding the Rock Vault. It's a very successful show in Vegas. And he also is the guitarist for Paul Rogers and Bad Company.
Right.
So we couldn't compete with that. But, you know, we're very happy with Chad. Chad is a he continually amazes me. His guitar prowess is beyond anything that we'd ever expected him to be, and he's really taken up the challenge, and he's really, really, he really plays the harp material spot on, and then we've recently started writing material, and he's very creative in that department, too.
Oh, so you guys are working on original music to go along with the harp stuff?
Yes, we are, yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, personally, I was a little too young to catch the original band in your heyday, but I was there in L.A. when you guys were inducted into the Hall of Fame, and watching the six of you was really one of the great concert moments of my life. It just seemed effortless. You know, what was that night for you guys? Was it something where you kind of knew this was going to be, you know, the one song, or, you know, were there hopes that maybe something could carry on after that?
Well, you know, of course, the way that rock and roll works nowadays, everything's all planned out in advance. Mm-hmm. And Ann and Nancy made the decision, which, you know, God bless them that they let us play on, or they invited us to play on Crazy on You, but but then they invited their current band, which they were touring with at the time, to play Barracuda, which could have been maybe not, in my opinion, maybe not the wisest decision on their part, because Roger Fisher and Mike DeRozier are actually co-writers of the song Barracuda. So I think it would have been a much more enjoyable version of Barracuda for the audience and for the world at large that saw it on the HBO special.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, having been to quite a few induction ceremonies and seeing how bands handle it, you know, I think that you guys, even though, you know, some of those tensions were there, and it would have been great to see the original band play the full set, you know, I think all of you showed class doing it. That really came across in the crowd, and definitely appreciative to be able to, even if it was only one song, to see that happen.
Well, of course, you know how rock and roll works. We got together a couple days before, and we had a rehearsal at a private rehearsal hall down in Los Angeles. And the original performance, the first time we played it together, that could have been the show too, because it was flawless. Every time we played it, it was flawless. And we played it a few times that day, and then there was a dress rehearsal the day of the show. Mm. We played it a few times that day. And I mean, it was like you said in your opening statement, it was very it was very seamless, and it was like getting on the bike and riding it. It was just so, it felt so good and so natural. And I'm, you know, I'm very surprised that Ann and Nancy wouldn't want to put that lineup together for a tour of America or Europe or the world, I guess, because it's such a great iconic band, and I don't know, it'd be great for the fans, I think.
Yeah, and you know, you see that a lot of times as bands change members over the years. There's nothing that can match the chemistry of the original group that, you know, started off hungry and got them to where they are. And again, I think that was a perfect example of that. And
yeah.
You know, for one, I hope we do get to see it happen again at some point.
Yeah, well, hold your breath. Yeah, because the way I look at it is when a band is introduced to, you know, the world or the public or mm-hmm. whatever, there's a certain chemistry and charisma that all the members together have. And that chemistry and charisma is what entices the people to like the band. And, you know, I'm not saying that Ann and Nancy aren't, you know, super, super talented ladies and songwriters and musicians and everything, but there was something about that original chemistry that took it to a level, you know, beyond just talent. There was something about it that captured the imagination and the hearts of, you know, all fans all around the world.
Yeah, and, you know, kind of going back to the beginning with that chemistry, you know, you had the early version of Heart prior to Ann and Nancy ever joining. Do you remember that first time you heard Ann sing?
Yeah. Yeah, we had Roger and I placed an ad in a local newspaper for a singer and a drummer. And Ann had a drummer friend, and they and another singer friend who was male. Those three answered our ad, and we got together and we played over at the drummer's house in Bellevue. And it just felt really good. It just felt really natural. And, you know, it was the first time that Roger and I had ever played with, a lady singer. And, you know, it just... But we didn't really think of it as a lady or man or, you know, we just thought this is a very good musician and very good performer that we can, you know, that we should play with. So.
And what was the creative process on those early records? Were the songs kind of brought into the studio done or, you know, were there fragments where all of you kind of went back and added to that?
Well, a couple of songs were brought in, and they were pretty much completed. Hmm. I would say, you know, something like Love Me Like Music and I'll Be Your Song was pretty much completed.
Hmm. It's one of my favorites, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great song. And yeah. And Mike Flicker, our producer, and I, we really got mm-hmm. a good bass sound yeah. on that one, mm-hmm. and I'm really proud of that. And, you know, it's a fun song, too. But Magic Man was very raw, and I played a big part in coming up with the rhythmic basis, you know, the chunky mm-hmm. rhythmic basis of the song. And then I actually came up with a lot of the parts that are underneath the lead guitar parts. And the Moog solo.
And, you know, as the band began to develop and see success, you know, Roger and his brother Mike were kind of the first to leave the circle of the band, you know, in between Dog and Butterfly and Baby Lestrange. What effect did Roger's departure bring to the sessions after that? And, you know, the introduction of Sue Ennis as a co-writer, did it change the dynamic of the band?
Oh, yeah, yeah, it changed. Roger and of course, Roger and Nancy were a couple, and mm-hmm. and Ann and Mike, who is Roger's older brother, were a couple. And so they were pretty much the core of their cooperation with each other was kind of the core of the beginnings of mm-hmm. the Dreamboat Annie era and Magazine and Little Queen. And then by the time Dog and Butterfly was being recorded, there was some cracks started appearing in the relationships between the two ladies and the two men. And when Roger and Nancy split up, Roger was very, you know, he. I think he was mad at himself for for screwing up the relationship. And he was, so he was very erratic in the studio. And so it was really hard to get anything done in the Baby Was Strange era, because Roger would, every day he'd come to the studio, he'd have a different take on the parts that we were all trying to get recorded. So it was really hard. And, you know, you can't blame the guy for being upset at himself for screwing up the relationship, but that's how, you know, that's how humans are. They just,
it happens. Yeah.
There's no changing history. It's just anytime you screw up, you know, something good like that, you have no one to blame but yourself, and it's very hard to deal with. But anyway, he was it was just impossible to get anything done with. So we had to do something. And when Roger and Nancy and Mike and Ann were all couples, they could guide the creativity in a certain way that helped all the creative juices blend. But then after the couples broke up, then the creative juices were all separated and disjointed, so it didn't work as well.
And then you and Michael stayed for a little while after that, after the sessions for Private Audition. What led to you two going? Was it a kind of a group thing with you and Mike, or did you each go separately?
Well, after Nancy had broken up with Roger, she went straight to Mike DeRozier, and they started a relationship. And then just before the Private Audition sessions, Mike DeRozier and Nancy had a parting of the ways there. And that was more, I would say, they were both upset about it, but it seemed like Nancy was taking it a little harder than Mike was. Not to say that Mike was insensitive and taking it hard, but it seemed like Nancy was kind of distracted by the whole thing more. And during the recording and everything of Private Audition, Mike and I were not that, I don't know, we weren't that into the direction that was being laid out for Private Audition. I mean, we liked the song "Cities Burning." That seemed like a good extension of what Heart had done in the past. But it seemed like the other songs were taking it in a direction that wasn't as appealing to Mike and I. So we weren't that happy with it, and they could tell that we weren't. And so we kind of had a parting of the ways there. And, you know, and over the years from our royalty statements, I think we were right, because I have an audition.
It'll always tell the true story.
Yeah, it will, you know, the album speaks for itself, and it's the very lowest on the totem pole of all the efforts that we together.
And then after you and Mike left, you guys, along with Roger, became part of the band Alias, which was a great band that I think produced one of really the classic melodic rock records of the 80s. Can you talk a little bit about how Alias came together and why they never really got that lasting success?
Well, Mike, he kind of did some things with Richard Marx.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard Marx was managed by Left Bank and management company. And then Alias, Freddie and Steve, were also being managed by Left Bank. And so after Mike had left Richard Marx, the Left Bank came up with the idea, well, let's see what Roger, Steve and Mike are doing, and they paired us up, and it seemed to be working. And we did, a ton of touring. We opened up for REO Speedwagon. We did a bunch of radio promotions and, private shows and public shows. And we did, we played the Rick Dees show. We played the Tonight Show with Jay Leno and the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And, things were going great. And we were nominated for a Juno Award, which is the Canadian equivalent of Grammy. And we lost out, unfortunately, to, I can't even remember who. And then after that, the record company was saying that Freddie and Steve should be a duo, just go out on their own. And so we had a parting of the ways, and it was very strange. But, that wouldn't be the first band in history that the record company made a mistake on, so to speak.
Well, and especially around then, because we were beginning to see sort of a change in where music was going. And, Alias had that really clean, classic, melodic rock sound that, was about to kind of go by the wayside with some of the newer bands in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. And, at the same time, we were doing that is when the grunge explosion began here in Seattle. And, for me especially, because I was super plugged into the music scene downtown in Seattle, it was nice not to have to go on tour with Alias and be, because, I saw Pearl Jam at a club in downtown Seattle. And I was on stage for Soundgarden at watching in the wings for at a theater here in Seattle, and Alice in Chains and all that. It was just a fantastic time to be in Seattle and check out all the stuff that was going on.
What were your thoughts when you first saw those bands and those small clubs? Did you know as soon as you saw and heard them that they'd become who they ended up being?
Well, yeah. By the time that I was checking them out, they were already they were packing out everywhere they went. And, they were actually doing bigger shows around the country, but, for their hometown fans, they would play these clubs. And it was just, I was having a great time. And, it was the time of, you could drink a lot and stagger around between all these bars and see some really great bands in one night. You could spend a night downtown and see just awesome music. It was so fun.
I could imagine. Definitely a special time.
Yeah.
Now, that sort of kind of brings us back more toward the current. And first, jump back one more bit to the Hall of Fame. Were you guys surprised at how long it took for Hart to be inducted?
Well, you just kind of realize and from listening to, different bands and fans, it seems like every band, almost every band, not every band, but almost every band has, everybody can say, they needed to be in sooner or whatever. They don't need to be there. So you just take it as it is. And, of course, when we started, there was, and first had our big hits, there was no Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
So, there was nothing we really thought about at the time. And, so, and when it became to the point where, we were eligible for the Hall of Fame, you can't really say about your own band and yourself, we deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. It's other people have to convince you that has to happen. So we got some very good advice from a good friend of ours, Ann Catherine Ice, and she put together, you know, a couple of really good, she got a petition started and got us, you know, and led the way for the Hall of Fame to recognize Hart. And mm-hmm. so we are very grateful for that and grateful to her. And it's, you know, it's a crapshoot, so you never know. All I know is at the time that Hart was really getting a lot of airplay on classic radio all around America. Mm-hmm. And we still are. And it's, and it, you know, I'm so grateful to the radio, the DJs and the people that do that kind of stuff, that Hart is just so well respected in the, on the radio airwaves to this day. I mean, there's probably not a second on earth that a Hart song is not being played on a radio somewhere.
But, and they really are classic songs that have stood the test of time. They don't sound dated. You know, everything still sounds vibrant and fresh, and, you know, that's testament to the six of you.
Yeah. And, you know, and you can say the same thing about Elvis Presley. Some of the songs he recorded at Sun Studios, they sound great today.
Right.
And, you know, and that's the test of a great song, is that it sounds good no matter what era you play it, it still sounds mm-hmm. good.
And then getting back to the current project, Hart by Hart, you know, when you guys go on the road and you're looking at the set list, I mean, naturally you have the hits and the classics, but have there been some sort of deep tracks that you've pulled out that you think maybe didn't get their due the first time around? It's just songs that, you know, you've always wanted to play live.
Well, you know, everybody likes the song Hijinks. So we put, last mm-hmm. summer, we put that together, and we've been doing it, you know, at certain venues.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly, you know, the people and the promoters and the fans, they want to hear the hits, and they want to hear the hits played like they were created, like they were conceived, like they were recorded, so that it brings back all the memories and the nostalgia. I mean, we've had people come up to us after the show with tears in their eyes, thanking us for bringing back the memories.
Yep. And, you know, talking about playing live, I know you have a few dates in Washington coming up in the next week or so, and some dates in Vegas in the new year. What's 2019 looking like for Hart by Hart? Do you guys have a more extensive tour? You know, will we get you back out on the East Coast?
Well, you know, there's a lot of irons in the fire. It's so much to talk about mm-hmm. that I shouldn't even really be talking about it until, you know, we get stuff more solidified. And another thing is we're in tomorrow, let's see, on Friday, we're leaving for Lake Tahoe. We're going to play mm-hmm. Reno, so that'll be fun. But, you know, there's so much going on for the new year that, and it's, we can't really talk about it because it's, it hasn't been solidified yet, but there, I mean, it's some pretty big stuff, and it could involve, you know, going to other countries and everything.
Well, that's great. Well, you know, when you do have some news to announce, I'd love to talk with you again and get it out there everywhere. And I encourage everyone to check out the website, heartbyheart.com. You know, you have some music on there so people can hear this band and just hear the fun you guys are having with these songs. And the songs are done, as you said, like everybody remembers. And so check out heartbyheart.com, some of the media links, and, you know, you have your tour dates up there so people can find you.
Yeah.
And, I thank you for your time. I wish you all the best. And, again, we'll love to talk again in the future when you guys are ready to make some announcements on tours and records and things like that.
Yeah, we certainly will. Like, you know, John, who set up with us for us, mm-hmm. he's going to be, he knows what's going on, and he knows that when we have new news and good things coming up that we'll give everybody another call. And I'd love to talk to you again in the future. It's really been fun talking to you this time.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it a lot myself. So, Steve, thanks. Good luck in the future, and I hope we talk soon.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff, and good luck with your endeavors with your show and everything. And I'm really looking forward to speaking with you again and hopefully have some exciting music and announcements to make for the future.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Bye.
Bye.